This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. The American dream includes owning a home, but with home ownership comes maintenance costs and rising property taxes, not to mention a monthly mortgage payment. But it's all worth it, right? Because you have a roof over your head, and that equity you're building each day will help you as you get older and look to retire. That scenario isn't playing out for hundreds of families in northeastern Connecticut. Those families live in homes with foundations that are cracking. And their property insurance won't pay for the costly repairs to fix the structural problem, making their homes now worthless. Today, Where We Live, we look at what's causing these homes to crumble beneath them and whether these Connecticut residents are getting the kind of help they need. And we ask, how wide-ranging is this issue? Could hundreds more residents be living in homes that have faulty foundations? You can join the conversation, 860-275-7266. Have you noticed your home's foundation cracking? Are you afraid to come forward, wary of how your insurance company could alter your coverage? We want to hear from you. Again, 860-275-7266. You can comment on our website, wmpr.org/where we live. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. In studio with me today is Jim Williams. He's one of the homeowners in Connecticut who's dealing with this issue. Jim, you live in Tolland. Welcome to Where We Live.
Thank you.
Tell us about you and your family. When did you first buy your home, and how long have you lived there?
We've been in our house 13 years. We bought our house in 2003. It was our dream home. We bought a starter home in Vernon. We lived there for 10 years. Built up some equity in the home when we sold it. We were able to put down a pretty decent down payment. Working in the private sector at an architectural firm, we didn't have much of a retirement plan, so the house was going to be the third leg of my retirement with a 401k savings and equity.
You said it was your dream home. What about this property led you and your wife to buy it?
One of the... Our house is on a real wooded country road. What we like, till this day, we're surrounded by a sportsman's club. Across the street, maybe a quarter mile away, is open space. There's Joshua Trust land and a conservation area across the street where we could walk. We still do. And just the wooded, beautiful, windy, hilly road that we come up is almost too beautiful to speak of. I mean, it's beautiful.
And you raised your children there?
We did, yes. My son was in 3 or 4 years old when we went in. My daughter was just, I believe, in third grade. Tolland had just built a brand new high school. And when we were looking, that was one of the criteria that Marianne, my wife, and me were looking for. A place that when they went in to get educated through their high school years, they'd have a brand new school to do it in, with technology and things of that nature.
So it sounds like the perfect place for you and your family. When did you first notice that there were issues with the home's foundation?
When I first noticed it was probably February of this year. Whether I saw the cracks or not, I don't remember. I don't recall seeing them. If I did, I didn't really give them too much mind. I see in my work, I see cracks in concrete all the time. Some are natural and from the curing process, building, settling, and whatnot. So I didn't really take too mind of it. But after the WVIT, I guess it's Channel 30, had a segment on it, I guess I saw it. I noticed it. I saw the telltale damage that separates it from other things, and so February of this year.
You referenced NBC 30, whose investigation, I guess more than a year ago, first uncovered that there were more than just one or two homeowners that were dealing with crumbling foundations. So you said you saw the telltale signs. What exactly, how does it look, your foundation?
I'm not a structural engineer, but I can what I've been told and what I've known as a layman in some things is that concrete, most of the time you'll see cracks in concrete go vertically. They start at the top and work their way down. The crack that we had was horizontal. When I saw the the segment, and I noticed it. I knew someone that I worked with who poured concrete, and I just on a whim asked him about the crack, and he asked me, is the crack going vertical or is it going horizontal? The first crack that I noticed was going horizontal. Mm-hmm. And under further investigation, as the months have gone by, I've noticed more and more. Whether, you know, how long they were there, I don't know. I never really noticed them before, but it's like a spider crack almost. So. Mm-hmm.
And what does this mean for your home? And so, is it unsafe to live in now? And when did you first contact your insurance company about it?
No, I don't believe that it's unsafe. I don't believe that it's unsafe to live in it right now. I mean, if you think of stone foundations, they tend to have cracks and crumblings and things of that nature. But the progression of this is like a cancer in the concrete. It's going to eat away. It's going to keep going. It's going to get worse. And as you see, different levels of the mineral that's in there that's causing it. Different people that I've spoke to, being active with the basement wall, the crumbling basement wall coalition. It's been we've seen some pretty horrible stories.
The bigger issue, though, is if it's a structural problem, and so if you wanted to sell your house, this would be something that needed to be repaired.
Yes.
And it costs how much?
Through some of what we heard, upwards of $200,000.
So most people don't have that kind of money.
I don't have that type of money. Mm-hmm.
What did your insurance company tell you?
We're getting quite a bit of conflicting stories about what they will and what they will not do. Should we speak to an attorney? Should we not speak to an attorney? We haven't told our insurance company as of yet.
Are you afraid of being dropped for coverage? I know I've read excerpts from people that they've come forward and they've lost their insurance. And I think the state has now come in and said that insurance companies can't do that, can't drop their policy. But tell us, why are you hesitant to contact them?
I don't know where the one of the things that it seems like a the only avenues that we see people have is a lawsuit. You know, I think like many families who are in the middle class, living from week to week and paycheck to paycheck, I would say it's not a dire situation, but it's. I don't have the money to fight this. I mean, these are the Goliaths. What we have heard from people is the insurance companies like to litigate, and with their unlimited resources of lawyers and specialists and everyone else, it seems very difficult for my wife, my kids, my dog, my cat, and me is facing an upward battle fighting it. So I don't know, not to mention the stress that this puts on my life, the stress that it has on me. You know, there's a certain amount that becomes your full-time job. I mean, it really does. I mean, and, you know, unfortunately, working two jobs, it's tough to find the time to try to do this.
I'm talking with Jim Williams. He's a homeowner from Tallinn, Connecticut. He's one of hundreds of homeowners who are worried because they see their foundations and their homes crumbling beneath them. You mentioned that there's a mineral that's causing the damage, and I think the state has found a particular quarry where this mineral pyrrhotite, when the aggregate is taken from the quarry and mixed to make cement, that mineral then oxidizes in the foundation and causes these cracks. Is that right?
Yeah, I believe it's pyrrhotite. It could be pyrrhotite, pyrrhotite. What happens is in the presence of moisture and oxygen, it oxidizes. It creates, from what I've read, a gas that eats away at the plaster or the cement, expands, and it will continually to make more cracks. Obviously, when you have one crack, air, moisture, humidity, piled up snow on your foundation, it's going to be a problem. Yeah.
If you're like Jim Williams and you have come forward or experiencing crumbling foundations, we want to hear from you. The number 860-275-7266. You can email us at wherewelive@wmpr.org. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. When we come back from the break, we're actually going to hear from some state officials who have been trying to help the situation to find out how these homeowners are being affected. This is Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. We're talking about a problem that has impacted hundreds of homeowners in northeastern Connecticut so far. Their homes are crumbling beneath them. The foundations are cracking. Studies say a naturally occurring mineral has been found in that concrete. That mineral oxidizes over time, and that causes the foundations to swell and crack. Since an investigation from NBC 30 last year, more residents have stepped forward asking the state for help. Jim Williams is one of them. He's a homeowner from Tolland who noticed his foundation cracking. And we wanted to find out how the state's helping him and others. Joining us now in studio to answer that question is Jonathan Harris, Commissioner of the State Department of Consumer Protection. Commissioner Harris, welcome to Where We Live.
Thank you, Lucy. Good morning to you, your listeners, and Jim.
So how did your office get involved?
I was called July 27th, by the governor and asked to go out and take a look at a foundation that was deteriorating in East Hartford. And I was horrified by what I saw, being able to actually stick my then Sperry in the corner of the foundation, and reported back to the governor. And he immediately said, we got to get on top of this. He ordered me to talk to our attorneys at the Attorney General's office, George Jepson, and commence an investigation. And since then, it has been a priority of the department, of the governor's office. As a matter of fact, the governor appointed Lieutenant Governor Wyman to oversee and lead all of the efforts on this. And we immediately put together a dedicated team within the department, including an investigator, a former police officer, our director of our trades division, Rick Maloney, an attorney that was dedicated to it, communications people, and literally on a daily basis, we've been conducting this very thorough, deliberate, but really complex investigation. But it's a priority. I mean, you heard what Jim had to say, and I know as a homeowner, my home is my biggest asset. It's where my wife and I are raising our son, and it's a really horrible situation. And through all of the work and going out and talking to homeowners at times on a daily basis, but definitely every week, I've made a lot of friends, and it's something that we're going to continue to do a deliberate, thorough investigation and job on to learn as much as we can to help both the public and the private sector develop some resources to help homeowners.
You said the state's been investigating since last summer. I know recently there was an announcement from your office, also the state attorney general, that under the consumer protection laws in Connecticut, the state would not be able to file a claim against the companies that poured this foundation from the 1980s up until recently. Can you explain to our listeners why there could not be a claim filed?
Yeah, the basis of my authority as the commissioner is under the Connecticut Unfair Trade Practices Act. So that is the reason that we engaged Attorney General Jepson and his really qualified, hardworking staff to take a look at this with us and on our side, our team investigating as the client here. And we've communicated from the beginning that to make a claim under CUTPA, which is the Connecticut Unfair Trade Practices Act, it's extremely difficult, no matter what the context. And, of course, this is a very complex investigation involving a lot of science, involving decades worth of information, of documents. We've done everything that we could as far as we've talked to 300 to 500 people just in informal interviews. We've had dozens of interviews and depositions, subpoenaed tens of thousands of documents that were reviewed. There's been an expert that was retained at the University of Connecticut, a world-renowned expert in concrete. And we've continue to develop the facts, but it's just an extremely hard case to make. We'd always communicated that, and even if we could make it, which was we knew unlikely, it was really going to be tough to be able to actually recover a meaningful amount of money, even if we could assert a claim to help homeowners. But thankfully, there's another path. We also knew and have been saying and communicating to the public that we're hoping that by continuing this investigation, we said all the way through, that we would be able to develop facts on the scope, the causation, that would help policymakers both in the public and the private sector to be able to come up with ideas, resources, a menu that homeowners could use to help give them some recovery, even though we never thought it could be 100 cents on the dollar, but something to help them.
This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchel. Today we're talking about the problem of crumbling foundations. Hundreds of families in eastern and northeastern Connecticut are facing this problem, and we wanted to go now to a call. Sheila from Tolland, you're calling Where We Live today. How are you doing, Sheila?
I'm good.
So tell us, are you dealing with this problem?
Yes, I am. I have it. We had replaced our front foundation in 2005, not knowing what the problem was. And our foundation now is crumbling at the rest of our house, and including that front foundation, because J.J. Modis did pour that. Mm-hmm. We don't know where to go. We have no idea. This is devastating to us. We have a quote for our house for $243,610. And we need to know what to do.
All right, Sheila, I appreciate your call. Your phone is kind of in and out, but I think we did hear the gist of what you were saying. She's quoted Commissioner Harris that to fix her crumbling foundation, about $243,000. This is obviously very concerning for people who don't have that kind of money. They do have insurance policies. What's being done to protect these residents from their insurance companies, who I think as of now are saying that they're not going to cover that? Is that right? And what's the reason behind it?
Well, there have been lawsuits brought where settlements were made with homeowners by insurance companies. So the insurance companies, at times, there have been dollars given to help homeowners. You had reported earlier that Commissioner Wade had issued a directive first that homeowners could not lose their coverage, be denied renewal because of this condition being present. There's been pressure being put on insurance companies, and I'll tell you, they have come to the table, many of them, to talk. And there are some really solid settlement discussions going on to try to get a large chunk of funding in to help homeowners in the short run. So as far as the insurance companies go, that is going on. Of course, there's some lawsuits now, class action and some other lawsuits that are going that hopefully will yield some results for people. What we're trying to do, again, is to develop the facts as thoroughly and as deliberately as possible so that not only insurance, but there could be other sources, whether it's tax credits or other sources of funds, lower cost services by bulk purchases, different resources, kind of a menu that both not just the state government or local government, but the private sector in partnership can create that homeowners that have different situations, they might have different conditions in their house where it is in the process of deterioration, there might be at a different stage in their financial life, and that they can draw down on some of these resources to help make themselves whole. So Sheila, I've had this discussion with people a lot, and I'm sorry, I can't say much more about how horrible I know it has to be. But I can tell you one thing, that not only the Department of Consumer Protection, but the governor's office, Lieutenant Governor, who not only is assigned big projects, but she's also a neighbor. She's one of Jim's neighbors in Tolland. So she's there, at ground zero, if you will. And so this is a priority of the state government. We have worked with the local governments consistently. We've met consistently, or I think are meeting this week again, with legislators. So this is an all-hands-on-deck collective effort, public and private, to develop solutions as quickly as possible, understanding also that this is not something that's going to probably go away right away. This could be a problem that unfolds over the next decade or so, or maybe more. And we need to be able to sustain it, too.
You mentioned Jim. Jim Williams is in studio with us, and he lives in Tolland. He's dealing with a crumbling foundation. You're sitting here next to Commissioner Harris. He's talking about how the state's trying to help you and others. I mean, how do you feel? Do you feel that the state's doing its job?
Well, I'd like to correct you. It's a basement wall.
It's not a foundation. It's a basement wall. This is language that the insurance companies are using to try to limit what we have. What we have to try to use their language to try to get out of paying for these particular foundations. This is what we're up against. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a plague. This is a plague that's starting. This is a, you know, we're watching the first cases. You're watching. Sure, it's been around for a few years, isolated here, isolated there. This is what you hear about. This is what you think about. You hear about these cases, but it doesn't hit home. And then all of a sudden, the pandemic starts. It starts, and it starts with one, and it starts with 10, and then it starts with 100. Okay? And you look at some of the numbers that have been tossed around is that the J.J. Motis company poured upwards of 20,000 foundations in this area for residential. I mean, if you looked at half of them, it's 10. If I had to make a guess, I would say there's probably 7,000 homes with this problem. It's going to be economically devastating for the towns that have that. And to sit here and face it and to sit here and look at it, it's too big for me to even fathom. The fix is too big for me to even fathom. If someone came in tomorrow, someone who heard my voice and said they would pay for have my foundation fixed, you understand that they're going to dig a hole around your house. They're going to lift your house 3 feet in the air. They're going to take the basement walls off of your house, disconnect your plumbing, disconnect your heating, disconnect your electrical, disconnect your sewage, lift it up, put it back down. Absolutely extraordinary. I mean, I the stress that it would put on your pets, your family, the people that live there, the neighbors, it's extraordinary.
Commissioner Harris?
Yeah, I mean, Jim's exactly right. Everything he says is correct. And that's why, you know, from what I can do is, again, to continue to deliberately and thoroughly conduct this investigation to get to all of the facts. And scope is a big problem, you know, a big question. That we have, and it's big. We know it's big, but how big, and how you design, you know, a program, resources, again, not just the public sector, the private sector, people working together to come up with a way to address those problems that Jim has, that Sheila has, that others have in the short run, but also be able to help those as they come on board. And I think Jim hit it on the head. One of the big things here that I've found, and I feel it because in talking to people, returning calls and reaching out to people on a daily basis, going out and talking to the community, is that there is this really huge psychological burden. So you're not only talking about a repair or replacement of foundation. You're talking, as Jim said, about relocation costs. Mm-hmm. I think there's issues, you know, psychological issues that people have. How are we going to help people deal with those? I mean, maybe a PTSD type of issue. So there's a huge range of issues, a complex set of facts. That's why going deliberately, thoroughly to figure it out so that we do the right thing. You really only have one chance to get this right, and we need to do it right. We're working hard to do that.
We're getting a tweet from Ben who says he's currently shopping for homes in affected areas, so I guess eastern and northeastern Connecticut. He says he's avoiding homes built after 1980 for peace of mind.
I have a house for sale. Just kidding. It's not for sale.
I mean, that is an issue, too. I mean, mm-hmm. the effect on the real estate market and what that does as we're working hard to you know, dig out of the Great Recession. And we've had a lot of traction, a lot of jobs created in the private sector. But, you know, that's also something. So, again, this has to be a very holistic view, and that's why continuing this investigation deliberately, thoroughly to get to the facts is the thing that I am focused on to make sure that people have the same plate of information that's accurate to be able to help each other.
I want to take a call now from Tim Heim. He's a homeowner from Willington, also president of the Connecticut Coalition Against Crumbling Basements. Tim, thanks for holding on the line. You're on Where We Live.
Hi, good morning.
So you've been dealing with this personally, and you've been helping other families affected. What can you tell us about what homeowners are hearing from the state, their insurance companies?
Well, I mean, currently what the homeowners are hearing from the state is absolutely nothing. And, you know, I do give kudos to Commissioner Harris and the DCP because I know he is working extremely hard. I do challenge some of the statements with our elected officials, you know, Lieutenant Governor Nancy Wyman, it took her 6 months before she came to my house and saw a crumbling basement firsthand. She made a comment back in February at my meeting in Tallinn that she wasn't going to drop the ball. Her and the state weren't going to drop the ball again. And we have not heard from her or seen from her since. She lives in Tallinn, which is one of the towns that is highly affected. Our elected officials will say to you that they're working very hard, but if you ask them what they have or are doing to come up with a financial resolution for the victims, they can't answer that question. And a year later, people are losing their homes to foreclosure because they can't afford a rent. There's a woman's home in Stafford that was deemed unsafe to live in. She can no longer live in her home because of this problem. So now she's got to pay a rent and can't afford to pay a mortgage and also a rent. So her home's going into foreclosure. We're the middle class. We pay for everything in Connecticut, and the way we're being treated by our state is unacceptable. Governor Malloy has yet to see this problem firsthand. The state of Connecticut ignored this back in 2002 when Senator Blumenthal was the attorney general. In doing so, they allowed this problem to continue for 14 years.
I just wanted to ask you, so Commissioner Harris is here, also legislator. Representative Bill Amon is also on the phone. So I wanted to before I head to Representative Amon, Commissioner Harris, Tim mentioned that this is something back in 2002 that some owners have approached the state about. Can you talk about that at all, the timeline of when the state heard this was a problem?
Yeah, that was well before I was around, but there was a meeting that occurred in 2002, and over the course of the next decade, the department received about 8 complaints out of probably close to 100,000 complaints that we received just in general at that time. And so there was something that was done back then, but I look forward. Hey, I've been involved in this since July 27th. Tim has been, I, as you know, completely understand the frustration you have and what you're feeling and what your friends, family members, and neighbors are feeling. But, we've been really working on this. I'm looking forward to doing this investigation deliberately and thoroughly, and thank you for your kind words, Tim. Tim and I had a point where we were texting each other, sometimes 3 a.m. and mm-hmm. communicating on this issue. And I know he's trying to drive it forward in under extremely difficult conditions, but the lieutenant governor did go out to Tim's house as with others, and I think stayed there for a couple of hours. She's been driving this. All the meetings that we've had with elected officials, with the legislature, with other state agencies. We have another one coming up this week. She has been really driving that process. Maybe it's not visible enough. I mean, I can understand that. We are, putting pressure on the state has been putting pressure on. But also working with the insurance companies that really want to help be part of the solution, not the whole thing, but part of the solution. And so that is something else that we've communicated that's going on. So there are a lot of efforts. But again, I totally understand the way that Tim feels. And a bill was passed that you can talk to mm-hmm. Representative Amon, bipartisan, by the way. Quite a contrast to what we're hearing on the national level.
And you referenced Representative Amon. He's been very patient with us on hold. Representative Amon, you're on Where We Live. What can you tell us about how you're helping your constituents in South Windsor?
Good morning. Yes, I think the part that's frustrating as a state representative to deal with this is legislatively we're limited to going forward and coming back to someone like Tim and saying this is what we can do legislatively, legally, is very difficult. We tried to have a bill that would force the insurance companies to pay for the damage, and it became very clear that that type of legislation would not work and probably would not be held up in court going forward. So we did pass some things going forward that we're allowed to do. One of the other problems legislatively that we've run into is, other than northeastern Connecticut, very little awareness of the problem. When I gave the presentation on the floor of the House as to what the bill did and why it was so important and went through some of the horror stories that we've all heard, After the vote, I had numerous representatives from around the state come up to me and say, "Bill, never heard of the problem before. I never realized it was such a big deal." So that was part of the job of the legislature to educate the other legislators about the problem itself.
Representative Amon, so what does this law that just passed, what does that do to help homeowners moving forward?
It does, moving forward, not to the current owners, but it will give a record when someone receives a certificate of occupancy as to where concrete came from and where it was placed. One of the problems we're currently facing is we don't know what foundations Motos poured. It also has a section that allows a homeowner that has a defective foundation to go in to the assessor and have their property taxes reduced to the current market value after the house needs repairs. So that can be a very, very substantial drop in someone's property taxes. We also address the problem that has been discussed regularly of people coming to Consumer Protection or any other agency and saying what their problem is, because it's now becomes a public record, and the myths of, oh, if the insurance companies get a copy of this or someone else does, it could be used against us in a future lawsuit. So what we did was limited the Consumer Protection Agency, any information they receive from the public or any information they receive from other executive branch agencies would be exempt from the Freedom of Information Commission requests for 7 years. So hopefully in 7 years this problem will be thoroughly discussed. We also said in 7 years, if it still has to be kept confidential, people are concerned, we can always extend it. So those are some of the main provisions of the bill and how it affects people.
I wanted to go back to Tim Heim, a homeowner from Willington, also president of the Connecticut Coalition Against Crumbling Basements. Tim, you're hearing from Representative Amon about a law that was passed to help homeowners going forward. But for the current homeowners like yourself that are dealing with this issue, what do you need to see happen to help you and others?
Well, we need financial resolution. You know, speaking about the bill that Representative Amon mentioned, you know, to get your taxes reassessed, you know, it's a double-edged sword. If you go to your town and, you know, you start paying taxes on just the land, you know, eventually what's going to happen is the towns are going to have to raise the mill rate to offset that loss. So, you know, it's a big circle. It's a vicious circle. And, you know, the homeowners need help now. You know, again, the elected officials will tell you they're working very hard, but they can't give you specifics on, you know, a financial resolution for the middle class who pay for everything in Connecticut. I had a woman call me over the weekend. She was selling her home. The home inspector was there, told her she has this issue, and now she can't sell her home. She has a brain tumor, and her husband was just diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And I hear these stories day in and day out of people that did everything right for Connecticut, paid their bills, paid their taxes, played by the rules, and now when the middle class needs help from the state of Connecticut, they're turning a blind eye, especially Governor Malloy. You know, Governor Malloy's focused more on his political future in D.C. and has forgotten what he was elected to do in C.T., and that's very discouraging and disappointing.
Commissioner Harris is here. He represents the Connecticut Department of Consumer Protection. Obviously, Governor Malloy is your boss. I mean, you've said earlier that you're trying to help these homeowners. What else is happening moving forward to do that?
Well, Governor Malloy has made this a priority of the administration in that he engaged the Department of Consumer Protection, the Attorney General's office, and doing this massive, complex investigation to get to the bottom of this. And even though we communicated that it would be hard to assert a claim under CUTPA, the Unfair Trade Practices Act, and you know, even if we could, which was unlikely, that it would be tough to recover a significant amount of money, that investigation had always had another path that we communicated, and that's developing the information for solutions to get it right. I talk to the governor frequently about this. It is without a doubt on his radar, and he assigned Lieutenant Governor Wyman, who he only gives big important projects to, and who is a neighbor of these people. So it is a focus, but again, I don't want to argue that because I totally understand what Tim's saying. He's trying to move it forward. It's a horrible situation, and people do need help now. We need to get it right, and you know, I'm confident that moving forward, we'll be able to develop the facts to help not just the state and not just the local governments and not just like the Capital Region Council of Governments. Lyle Ray and his crew and other regional bodies have stepped up and are part of the process to create resources, and all of us along with the private sector that has to participate too, I believe will be able to come up with something. But, you know, I understand there's a big need now. We have to move quickly, but in a way that makes sense so that we do it right.
You mentioned the private sector. I read that four insurance companies come forward to help with some type of voluntary program to provide assistance to homeowners, but a lot more insurance companies need to come forward, don't they, to help these people?
The more that come forward, the more money there'll be, the better it'll be, and I urge people to call their carriers to put pressure also on their carriers. It can't just be the state that does it. This is an all-hands-on-deck public-private sector partnership that has to get this done, and it has to get it done as soon as possible, and also make sure that we keep our eye on the ball, that this is a problem that's going to be going on for years, so that we do it right.
I want to take one last call. Sue Ann from Tallinn, you're on Where We Live.
Hi, good morning.
Tell us about what you're dealing with.
Well, we're dealing with the same thing many others are. We bought this home in 2006, and in 2014, I noticed some strange cracking and thought, that doesn't seem right. And then the news story broke, and I discovered that we, too, had the crumbling concrete foundation.
So how are you going to move forward? What are you going to do? Have you mentioned this to your insurance company? Are you sitting back and waiting to see what happens with how the state can help you?
We filed a claim with our insurance company, who still hasn't given us an answer. It's been almost a year since we filed the complaint. On one hand, they tell us they're investigating. On the next, they say it's not covered. We have joined a class action suit at this time. We cannot afford to pay $150,000 to replace the foundation of our home at this time. My husband and I are both retired. We still have a mortgage. And, you know, we love our home.
Well, thank you, Sue Ann, for letting us know, you know, how you're dealing with this. And hopefully, as we move forward, we're going to hear more from Commissioner Harris and others. I just had one quick question from a listener, Commissioner Harris, wondering if FEMA could help these homeowners.
FEMA is one path that's being investigated. I should have mentioned that we also have the federal government engaged. Congressman Courtney has been, you know, he lives there. He's at Ground Zero also, elected lieutenant governor. He's been on top of this. Representative Larson has been on top of it. Senators Blumenthal and Murphy, they've looked at FEMA. We're trying to gather information because, you know, you need a certain amount of damage on the ground to even have FEMA be able to come in and kind of do their analysis. So that's something that's on the table. They're also investigating, and Congressman Courtney and Larson, their staffs, they went actually and met with the Ways and Means Committee and they got permission to go ahead for their staff to deal with the Internal Revenue Service because there was a Chinese drywall crisis in Florida, that there was a tax credit that was given, so they're looking at that piece of it. We're also, you know, everybody is studying what happened in Quebec. There are other pieces of literature that are both our scientific investigator, our expert from UConn are looking at. Everyone is trying to turn over every single stone. I would tell this, I mean, I'm really sorry that you and your family are facing this. I would urge this woman, is it Ann?
Sue Ann,
I'm sorry about that. Sue Ann, to call the insurance department at 800-203-3447. That's 800-203-3447. Or CIDCA@CT.gov. That's CIDCA@CT.gov. And report if you're not getting responses from your insurance company. Put the pressure on. Let the insurance commissioner know. And just like she issued that directive, she will help keep these companies in line. Many of them, as you say, are trying to help. There are four larger ones and others that are smaller that are trying to come up with a solution, but we all need to work together on this.
But right now, just words from the insurance companies. I know people like Jim Williams from Tallinn would like to see some financial assistance.
Yes, absolutely. you know, even just sitting here talking and listening to Commissioner, we, like you said, like Tim, we thank for his help. He's been at many meetings that I've been to late at night, away from his family, working on this. But when I sit here and I just think about how big it is and how mind-boggling, and you know, once you get into a lawsuit and people have to keep their mouths shut, they can't join in as one voice. And I guess one thing that I want to mention is that if you live in a neighborhood and your house has been built in this time, even if you're not affected and even if you didn't have concrete poured by these folks, your property values are dropping as we speak. If you look, you'll watch them drop. I mean, I've watched my house drop from 300,000, you know, to 290, to 275. Now with this problem, where am I at? Now, if you think that you're going to get, you know, just roll into your retirement and sell your home and think that that house down the street's not affecting your property value, it is.
I want to thank Jim Williams, a homeowner from Tolland, also Commissioner Jonathan Harris from Connecticut's Department of Consumer Protection. On the phone was Willington homeowner and president of Connecticut Coalition Against Crumbling Basements, Tim Heim, and Representative Amon, who represents South Windsor in the Connecticut General Assembly. Obviously an ongoing problem. We're going to check back in a few months. Thank you all for joining Where We Live.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Coming up tomorrow, Connecticut's Bond Commission has approved more than $2.1 billion in borrowing since January 1st. That's a lot of money. We'll get a primer on bonding with a member of the commission and Connecticut Mirror budget guru, Keith Faniff. He'll explain the role of bonding and how it actually operates. Today, Where We Live, we're now turning our attention to the fact that six legislative commissions were consolidated as one of the cost-cutting measures in the $19 billion budget passed in June by the General Assembly. Critics of the move said at the time the proposal, quote, conflates the issues of the diverse groups represented and, quote, would move Connecticut in the wrong direction. Well, one of the new consolidated commissions is the Commission on the Status of Women, Children, and Seniors. It merges three former groups, the Permanent Commission on the Status of Women, the Children's Commission, and the Aging Commission. Joining me now in studio is Steve Hernandez, executive director of this newly formed Commission on Women, Children, and Seniors. He joins us to talk about the commission's work. Thank you so much for coming in today, Stephen.
Lucy, it's a pleasure to be here.
So obviously, because of the budget crisis, we saw these commissions getting crunched into two specific ones, yours being the Commission on Women, Children, and Seniors. So first off, why do we need these commissions, and what is the work that you do?
Absolutely. Well, you know, Lucy, we like to think of ourselves as conveners and strategists on behalf of the legislature, for the legislature, and on behalf of our advocates for these three disparate groups. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that we found is that the voice of women, children, and seniors are best represented by the advocates who are on the ground working on these issues. What we do is we convene those voices and we bring them loudly and clearly to the legislature. We are staff to the legislature, but at the same time, we care about these issues deeply. You know, the commission was built on the pillars of the three former commissions, the Commission on Children, Women, and Seniors, as you said, and our work is a solemn one. It continues. And, you know, you started by hoping that we haven't moved backwards in this work, and I don't think we have. You know, one of the things that we have found in the last few days is that coming together as three commissions now into one was a very intentional process after the legislature decided that they were going to do this. We had a very intentional convening, and we said, let's come together and see how we can preserve this work and how we can truly continue to support these communities in a meaningful way. And that's what we've done.
So obviously, again, your work as one consolidated commission just began July 1st. But so it seems like it would be challenging to look at the needs of women, of children, of seniors, and try to be able to, do those studies and get that information to the General Assembly and others. So how do you do it?
Well, I'll tell you, we're not alone. I think one of the things that we found in the last few weeks and months that we've been preparing for this launch, and, you know, we did launch July 1st, but we had the benefit of several weeks where we've been able to work on preparing ourselves for this new reality. And one of the things that we found in meeting with advocates from the different communities is that we are not alone. We do have support, and our future now will be determined by how we forge those partnerships and continue them into our new reality. You know, Jillian Gilchrist, who was one of our former PCSW colleagues, is one of our champions for anti-trafficking. I know that you had the conversation about trafficking here just a few weeks ago. Jillian will be continuing now in under her new role as the chair of the Trafficking Council. It's one of those, it's one example of how it is that we are partnering with our partners on the ground to continue the important work of these commissions.
So when we look forward, obviously your commission also looks at seniors. And so what are the biggest concerns that you're hearing from community members, from advocates about the needs of seniors in Connecticut and how you can help them?
Sure. Jonathan Steinberg, one of our leaders in the House of Representatives of the legislature, was one of the first to actually come to us just a few weeks ago and brought to us the voice of the Long-Term Care Advisory Council. It's one of the councils that we have chaired and led on as the Commission on Aging for several years now. The Long-Term Care Advisory Council is one of those councils that really brings together the voices of seniors. You know, when you think of elder abuse, economic abuse, the situation of elders aging in place, things that we want to do to keep elders in Connecticut, those are the issues that are at the forefront of the senior community. And Jonathan Steinberg will now be leading the Long-Term Care Advisory Council with us. So it's one of those bright spots where we see we will continue to bring the best practices and the best information for seniors in Connecticut to the legislature.
You know, the budget crisis in Connecticut led to these commissions to be consolidated. Obviously, Connecticut still has future deficits in front of them. Sure. How do you ensure that the needs of these populations that you now represent will be addressed in the future? Again, because the legislature is still going to be looking to cut. We're going to still possibly see taxes go up after the November election. I mean, what can you tell people who are listening about, you know, the needs of these populations?
I'll tell you, Lucy, what this consolidation showed us is that this legislature cares deeply about these communities. This is a shared pain that we experienced by being consolidated, and it was a very difficult process. But the fact that we're still here and the fact that we were consolidated in a very intentional way shows that the voices of seniors, children, and women are still as relevant to the legislature and to the people of the state of Connecticut as they have been. And how we continue to ensure that these voices come to the floor of the House and the Senate of the legislature is that we work with our partners in the legislature who are champions for this work. As I said before, we don't work alone in these issues, and we continue to find our champions in the legislature who will help us move these issues forward.
We keep talking about the commission as this whole entity, but sure. Tell us about your staff. How many people do you have working on these important things?
Well, now we have it's an 8-person staff. We are staffed by 8 people. We now have 7. We don't have a full complement. We are yet to fill our position for women's advocacy, and we are hoping to fill that position very soon. You know, we have 3 of the 4 necessary signatures, and we're very excited to fill that position. I know that you know, in order to move forward as a full complement, we have to have that position filled. But I'll tell you, Lucy, our staff is staff from our former commissions. You know, there are staff that reapplied for these commissions and did so because they really cared about the work. These are staff that have years, collective years of advocating for these communities. And my deepest, deepest respect and appreciation for the staff. I can't even tell you how wonderful they've all been coming together as a staff moving forward. It's been really inspirational for me as their executive director.
For our listeners who want to know more about your work, I mean, how do they contact you if they've got a specific issue?
Sure. Our website is up and running. We also have they can call us directly. If you look at the Connecticut General Assembly's website, you can reach us at our site there. Mm-hmm. And also you can call us directly at 860-240-1475.
And just to play the devil's advocate, some people who may be listening might think, well, do we really need these commissions? We elect legislators to look after our best interests. Is this a waste of money?
I'll tell you what. Legislators come together. It's a very difficult job to be a legislator, and it's very difficult, especially because they care deeply about the places that they represent. And they are there tirelessly, and they work tirelessly to bring the issues of their constituents to the legislature. What we do is we strategize with them, and we help convene the right advocates and the right voices for them so that we do the groundwork to bring the voices of these communities to the legislature. We allow them to do their work in their communities while we help them do the work of the people, the women, children, and seniors of Connecticut up at the legislature.
I want to thank Stephen Hernandez. We're going to have to leave it there. The time goes fast. Executive Director of Connecticut's newly formed Commission on Women, Children, and Seniors. We'll have more information on our website about the commission. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, Lucy.
Our show is produced by Lydia Brown and Tucker Ives. Our technical producer is Kyone Wolf. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Thanks for listening.